everybody. Welcome again to F This Movie. Happy spring break. My name is Patrick Bromley, and I'm joined tonight by someone who's on spring break herself.
Spring break!
Erica Bromley.
Hello.
Spring break forever.
Spring break forever!
I'm going to try really hard not to just keep doing bad, like, James Franco impression throughout the podcast. It's tempting to keep quoting and imitating James Franco on the podcast, but I'm not going to. We're talking about Spring Breakers on this week's episode, and we're going to try and do it spoiler-free for a while. We'll give you plenty of advanced warning before we go into spoilers.
I'm going to fail that, I think. I'm afraid.
Well, I'm just saying, if you haven't seen Spring Breakers yet, and there's a good chance you haven't,
Spring Break,
go ahead and listen to at least the first half of the episode, and then just go ahead and tune out when we say spoilers. Remember, you can always find our website at fthismovie.net. You can like us on Facebook at facebook.com/fthismovie.
I like you.
I like you. Follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/fthismovie. I follow you on Twitter. or email us at fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com. I apologize. I sound all sick again. I think there was 1 week of the show where I haven't been sick in the last three or four.
Aww.
So
you don't look sick.
Well, thank you very much.
Sound sick.
The people can't. The people can't see me though.
But
you can see me because you're here sitting next to me. We live together.
Can I see them?
Well, yeah, you can see them. Okay. That's how podcasting works. You can see everyone who listens.
Hi guys.
But they can't see you.
We should do this podcast in sort of like a bright neon.
Agreed.
Light
agreed.
Sort of look, you know.
Absolutely.
But they can't see us.
So before we talk about Spring Breakers, Bew, have you seen anything good lately?
Yeah, well, I don't know. Lately, I guess the last thing, what did I see? I saw Stoker. We saw Stoker.
We did see Stoker.
That was good.
It was good.
Yeah, I like Stoker. It kind of, like, messed with my head a little bit.
In what way?
I didn't really know where it was going. And then even
That's
when
a good
I
thing,
did
though, right?
start, yeah, definitely. Yeah. But then when I did start to kind of figure it out, it was just creepy and, you know, got under your skin a little bit. I don't know.
I'm kind of surprised at the generally negative reaction to that movie.
Yeah, why?
I don't know. I don't know if it's a function of people have liked Park Chan-wook's other movies, and so they were going into it with inflated expectations. I don't know if it's people who haven't seen his other movies who don't know how to process the sensibility that's at work in the movie.
Right.
I don't know if they're uncomfortable with some of the places that the movie goes. All kinds of reasons. I understand that it has the potential to be a very polarizing movie, but I would have
right. Certain scenes especially.
I would have thought some of the critical community would have been nicer to it, because I thought it was good. I didn't actually for a little while. Like, the first half hour, I was kind of unsure of how I felt about the movie. It takes a while to kind of come together.
And the sort of style of the first half hour, wasn't there, like, some narration or something?
There was some voiceover at the beginning.
Yeah. And that went away.
Terrence Malick-y voiceover because you don't know what the hell this person. It's like it's word salad.
Even
it's
when you figure out what's happening, though, because
right?
You
that
do,
it's all a dream.
Yeah.
That it's all
Santa
taking place.
Claus is not real.
That it's all taking place in the mind of an autistic.
Even when you figure it out,
yes.
You're not bored because there's a way that it's all being revealed that just captivates the audience. I think.
Like, agreed.
Well, at least me in the audience and you apparently.
We were
not,
in the audience.
We were in the audience.
I remember that.
I don't know about everybody else liking
right.
it. I guess, but. But yeah, I liked it.
It was good.
I liked
style.
It.
If you haven't already read it at our website, fthismovie.net, Adam Risky wrote a review of the movie.
Adam Risky!
You can find it quickly. There's a search box at the top left of our page, or we have a new Movies A to Z tab. Just click that and
That's
locate.
That's a great idea.
Thanks. Locate the Stoker review by Adam Risky. Hey, before we talk more about movies, you know what we should say? F This Movie's own Doug and his lovely wife just gave birth to their first child. I know we've been building up to it a lot on F This Movie.
Yeah.
It's been part of our season-long arc, and finally it paid off in a very special episode where Doug, they had a beautiful daughter, so congratulations to Doug and his wife and new daughter. Yay. Everybody's been super nice and commenting and saying nice things.
That's
in the lead-up, so...
It's a nice F This Movie community.
Right?
I like you people.
Now there's an F This Movie baby.
I know.
I guess
how many babies have been born since F This Movie started?
Only the second.
Okay.
Our daughter and now Doug's daughter.
And they're best friends already.
Yeah. So get to sexing, people, and make more F This Movie babies.
Yay.
Anyway, what have
you
seen?
Make, like, some onesies to sell.
What have you seen besides Stoker?
Why can't I buy an F This Movie t-shirt on your site?
I am sorry. We don't make them. We don't have a store.
About,
there's a lot of reasons.
How about a sticker?
Again.
How about a pencil?
If you want to take over that, the merchandising,
the merch,
feel free.
Okay.
You can run the FS Movie store.
What else did I see you were asking?
That was what I was asking.
I like documentaries a lot.
Yes, you do.
And, well, I recently watched Hoop Dreams again for the zillionth time.
Yeah.
I think if you read the site, you already know that I love that movie so much and sort of obsessed. And I was so happy because I recommended it in the Netflix This Movie column.
Yeah.
And then, I think, what's his name?
Tom
Bartman. He said that he watched it and that he liked it. So, hi, Tom. Hope you're listening. Thanks for watching. And thanks for liking it. Because I think I put it out there that if you watch Hoop Dreams and don't like it, I never want to know. I don't want to end any friendships.
Sure.
I recently watched a documentary called How to End a Plague? How to Survive a Plague.
It was called How to Deal. It was a documentary about Mandy Moore finding love, but also being kind of sarcastic.
How does she deal with the love?
It was a documentary called How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days. And it was all about how to lose a guy in 10 days.
Oh my gosh. What?
It was a documentary. It was called How to Make an American Quilt. And it was all about...
This could go on all night.
This
podcast has become How to...
How to Survive a Plague.
How to Survive a Plague, yeah. And it was nominated for Best Documentary at the Oscars.
Right, but lost to Searching for Sugar Man?
Yes.
Which everyone said would win, but everyone also agreed it was an inferior movie. And I haven't seen Searching for Sugar Man.
That's what I've read. I haven't either. I'd like to. Is it on Netflix Instant?
I don't think it is.
Okay. Well, How to Survive a Plague was really fascinating. It was so informative, and just heartbreaking, sad. So
it's about
sadness.
The AIDS epidemic in the 1980s?
Yeah.
Okay.
And they have all this footage from when they basically took to action. Like, they organized, they met in, basements of random places, and they really tried to get large numbers of people together to fight for better medicine for HIV treatment. And I learned watching the documentary that better drugs were in use in other places, but our government or our FDA, or I don't remember exactly what, something like that, they just weren't bringing them here yet, or they weren't allowing them, or they weren't covering them.
That comes
they weren't
such
offering
a surprise
them.
To me.
Wow. I know. Wow. And it was just heartbreaking listening to these people talk and then seeing every few minutes in the movie, they just ran a counter of like how many people had died from HIV and AIDS. And it was very sad. And when they showed the footage of the AIDS quilts, do you remember learning about that? Or when you were, it was just really sad, but it was good. And I highly recommend it, but it's
on
so depressing. Instant. Right.
Yeah.
It's so depressing.
It's
so it's hard to recommend a depressing movie, but I feel like everyone should see it.
It's a crazy thing because our parents lived through all these things and they would try and like pass it down to us. Like, you guys don't know, but I was alive for this thing.
Right.
And this feels like one of those things that like AIDS is not gone, although currently in the news, like they almost seem to be finding a cure, which is just unfathomable.
People, a baby was born with HIV.
And possibly now some adults. And it's like the most unbelievable development. But AIDS as we knew it in the 80s growing up is very, very different.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's weird that like our kids are going to grow up in a world that's so different that we'll not have the understanding of like what we went through. I don't mean you and me specifically,
but
as people
just but
went
learning
through
about it
during
and
like
having
the height of
fear.
The AIDS epidemic
and
how many people died as a result. Like, they're never going to know that. And so it's, I'm glad that this movie exists.
I didn't even realize that the numbers were so great until this documentary. It really was so informative.
I learned about AIDS from an episode of Mr. Belvedere. I wish that was a joke. That was my first exposure to, like, wait, there's this disease where someone, one of Wesley's friends, I think, had it. He got it from a blood transfusion because, it was a sitcom. It was the first time I'd heard about, he has this disease that, like, can't be cured and he'll eventually die from it. And, anyway, that was my introduction.
Ryan White, wasn't that the young boy who...
Yeah.
He was sort of the face of AIDS for me. Because, I was in grade school, I think, I didn't totally get it, but I can't imagine that the fear
and now the
that
face
young
of AIDS
even...
is AIDSy, the AIDS owl. along the same lines, of How to Survive a Plague, I saw a movie called Fun Size.
Oh, yeah. Those are the same.
Which is not about the AIDS epidemic. It wasn't good. I wanted to see it because, A, it takes place all on Halloween, and I like...
You love Halloween.
Halloween movies. Yes. But also because it was the directorial debut of Josh Schwartz, who created The O.C.,
right,
which is a show that we used to like.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
And for a little while, and then it was the worst thing ever. Right. And he created Chuck, which is a show I really like. So I was curious to see it, and Ricky Lindholm is in it, a couple people are in it that I wanted to see. It's not good at all, and part of the problem is that it casts in the lead, I want to remember her name, Victoria Justice?
Sure. Is she from that
Nickelodeon
show, Victorious? Show?
Yes. Oh. And she is, again, not a person. She's this weird product, this teen idol that's been manufactured, and she sings, and she dances, and she acts, but she doesn't do any of them well. It's just this, she comes out of this factory. Anyway, her best friend in the movie is played by Jane Levy from Suburgatory, who's infinitely more talented and interesting. And yes. It's like, why are you in the best friend role? Right. I want to watch you, not this robot named Victoria Justice. Even that is not a name. I just don't believe that's a name.
Right.
Anyway, the movie was not good. Don't see it, I guess, is my point. And then the only other movie I'll talk about is the other night, the Chicago Film Society here in Chicago did a screening of The Warriors, and I wanted to go, but I was feeling very sick, and then you were all like, no, you can't go. I control you. I'm the boss. You're like the naggy wife,
totally.
And I was like, but
always.
I want to watch football in the garage.
Right.
And you were like, no, we have to do this thing.
Let's have a dinner party.
So you, exactly, a fancy dinner party.
Very fancy.
And so you insisted on having a fancy dinner party, and I couldn't go see The Warriors.
Nope.
So instead, I watched it in our basement.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been a while since I saw that movie. I really, really liked that movie. Unfortunately, I saw the director's cut, which is one of the few instances, I think, where like the director's cut is way worse than the theatrical cut. Adam Riske in the last Netflix movie brought up this phenomenon because he talked about Donnie Darko, where the theatrical cut of Donnie Darko is really good, but the director's cut is really bad. It's like, you, as a director, don't understand your own movie. So, a couple years ago, Walter Hill decided that what The Warriors was really missing was all these, like, comic book panel transitions. So he went and added them in, and they don't work, and they every time they show up, they immediately pull you out of the movie, and it's very frustrating. However, there's not that many of them, so you could still enjoy the movie. It's just every 10 or 15 minutes you go, oh, right, that sucks, and then you get back into the movie. So it's not the worst, but you wonder why it had to exist at all.
Right?
Right.
Right.
Right. Okay. Should we talk about Spring Breakers?
Spring Break!
I should have segued
Spring Break
into it when we were talking about Victoria Justice, because she's sort of exactly the kind of celebrity that...
Well, but how old is she?
I don't know.
No.
Well, she's 18, I'm sure. You know.
Really?
I don't know. I've never checked into it. By the way,
is that sure?
There's definitely people in our audience, possibly on our podcast, who would know exactly how old she is.
I know. I could text him right now and ask.
Oh, it's not just one person.
Oh,
yeah,
really?
There might be more than one.
Oh, well.
The point is this. Hi, Mike. she's exactly sort of the kind of person that is in Spring Breakers.
Right.
Because the movie... In case you don't know, it's written and directed by Harmony Korine, and we should both say up front, I have seen Kids, which he wrote.
And I have seen none of his
but
movies.
But I have not seen any of the movies he directed.
Right.
So this
I know,
was
I feel
first.
Like I've always read about them and know about them, but I've never seen any of them.
Right. I'm in the same boat.
Okay.
So we can't necessarily compare Spring Breakers to, say, Trash Humpers, because we haven't seen Trash Humpers, unfortunately. But we have seen Spring Breakers. And... What right off the bat, what is your reaction to Spring Breakers? Because we haven't talked about it. It's been a few days.
And
every time you want to talk about it, I say, no, we can't.
I know.
We have to wait
you
till
save
we
it for the podcast.
Yeah.
We're not allowed to talk about it at all.
Yeah.
This is taking over our lives.
Almost everything that you bring up now, I'm like,
save
it
for the podcast.
You're like, do you need me to pick anything up at the store? And I'm like, save it for the podcast. So as long as we're recording... Let's talk about what we need to get at the store. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah, well, we really don't have a lot of groceries right now.
This is boring. This is boring for the audience.
Sorry, guys.
What's your reaction to Spring Breakers?
I liked Spring Breakers. And I almost feel nervous saying that because I feel like there's going to be this weird backlash of like, you're not supposed to like Spring Breakers. Because anyone who I've spoken to who has seen it, and these are mostly, well, it doesn't matter. They have not liked it. Although I saw it with two of my friends. I think they both kind of liked it too. I don't, but we liked it because we felt like it was this social commentary. Like it was almost trying to shed light. I don't even know if shed light's the right expression, but shed light on like reality of certain culture and young people in our country that I think a lot of people, especially if they're middle or upper class, are just not paying attention to. Like issues that they're just not even issues, just behaviors, habits, hobbies, a lack of maybe.
Well, I think one,
socially accepted hobbies. I don't know.
One possible reading of the movie, and I think the movie offers a lot of different readings, so I won't say this is what the movie's about, but is sort of saying, I could say people in general, but I think it's more specific to a generation that they're the worst. And I don't know that that's what Harmony Korine is setting out to say, because I don't think he's that sort of simple-minded, and I don't even know that he believes that this younger generation coming up is the worst. But I think that's a very valid reading of the movie, and we'll talk about more why. Now, you had said that a bunch of people that you talked to didn't like it.
Right.
You are a teacher.
I am.
The theater that you went to, you saw a bunch of students because they're on spring break and they're at the movies, or they work at the theater.
Yeah, former students.
So these are, you know, high school age or just out of high school age students. And so I wanted to talk about this phenomenon that they hated it. There was actually an article today that I saw maybe on Slant. I don't remember. The article was basically pulling all these tweets from people talking about how Spring Breakers is the worst. A lot of people saying this is the worst movie I've ever seen. So there's this phenomenon of young people who are being marketed to with this movie because it stars Vanessa Hudgens and Ashley Benson and Selena Gomez especially, and it's this big spring break party movie.
Right.
And so they go see it, and they're tricked into seeing sort of an experimental art movie. I won't say it's totally experimental, because if you've seen experimental film before, it's unwatchable in a lot, for me anyway, because I'm not into that sort of thing.
I didn't think you were going to say unwatchable, but it's definitely a little
out there than this.
Yeah, right,
for sure.
There is a plot sort of here. There is.
Right. So I understand why they are not liking it, because it's not what they thought it was going to be.
Well, they think they're going in for this, like, fun spring break party, and it's that for, like, 5 minutes. No, I don't even know. It is that, and I know I can't give anything away.
Well, then we can talk about that.
Okay, it's just that even when it is that, like, even when it's just scenes of people dancing and bumping and grinding on the beach, and they're half naked, and like, oh my gosh, wow, spring break, so awesome, partying, it doesn't feel fun.
Well, I think that's... That's like a litmus test almost, because during those scenes, we'll come back to that in 1 second. When I sat down to watch the movie and I was by myself in the theater, and of course, as an adult man buying a ticket to see Spring Breakers, and you walk through and they tear your ticket and they see what movie you're going to see, it's like they just assume you're this pervert who wants to go see these young girls.
That's what they assumed about me too.
But like, did they have the same reaction when I went by myself to see Magic Mike? That was the movie that I kept thinking of.
Right.
Because while Magic Mike is way more commercial, ultimately, even the version that Steven Soderbergh made.
Although still, women were tricked into that thinking.
And that's where I was going, that it does the same thing, where the marketing tricks you into big naked party, and then you sit down and it's sort of this art movie, and Spring Breakers does the same thing with girls. Big naked party, you sit down, it's this art movie.
But I think the reaction to Magic Mike was more of, it was boring, not, it sucked, it's the worst, it's terrible.
Right.
But I keep hearing about Spring Breakers, it's terrible, it's
the worst,
horrible, it's awful.
Harmony Korine will, there's long stretches of almost no dialogue.
Right.
And then a lot of the dialogue is this weird overlapping where lines get repeated multiple times by the same characters, by different characters.
Spring Break!
Not even that.
No, I know,
but just
that's
like
the
long, even exchanges get repeated, and I think that, you know, to an audience who doesn't know what to make of that, they just think, why is that, why is he doing that?
Right.
That's stupid.
Right.
This
right.
Is
so
my,
they
immediate
almost think
reaction.
It's bad filmmaking. They almost think it's he doesn't know what he's doing.
Right. That's stupid. So let's talk about those opening, those opening like 5 minutes, we'll say. The movie sort of opens, Spring Breakers, and then you get a long stretch, a montage of just partying.
Right.
Spring break partying.
Right.
Naked people pouring drinks off each other, standing in the ocean, dancing, whatever. And the reason I say that that's kind of a litmus test is because I was sitting there thinking, okay, this is like the fun part, right? This is spring break. This is and there is
no worries, carefree.
There is an audience of people who look at that and say that looks like so much fun.
Sure.
Right, because the movie essentially presents it.
This is a real thing. We know that.
And the movie at that point is presenting those images without commentary. Right. It's just here are these things. Mm-hmm. But I watch it, and it's like. it feels like laying on the floor of a public bathroom. Like it's
get to that in
like
a
it's just well but you know what I mean? It's like it's just like this feels dirty and awful and I can't wait to get away from this.
Right.
Again, that's just me.
You don't have an interest in doing any of that. And I don't really either. I never went on that type of spring break.
But when you just look at how hard everyone is trying to quote unquote have fun, it requires so much effort. And I think, again, the movie goes in that direction. I think the movie has something to say about the amount of effort that it takes to entertain yourself, to have fun, to get a thrill.
Right, to get a thrill. I think that's ultimately what it's talking about, too. They work so hard, but I think that the people in those scenes or in real life who are doing that think it's the opposite of that. They think that they're just letting go of all worries. They're carefree. They're just letting it all hang out, and that's the ultimate happiness. You know, you don't have to worry. I'm not worrying about a thing. I mean, don't the girls even say a couple different times like something about this is life changing because I'm so relaxed or I don't have to worry about anything.
I wanted to get away from my normal
life. I need to get away. Everyone's always saying you have to get away.
I'm gonna find myself. There's all these different versions.
Which I thought was funny. Can I just make a point here? I felt, and maybe I'm wrong, but I felt like some of the lines were intentionally written in this new, like this modern age self-help speak a lot of people speak in now, like finding myself. It's not a new concept and certainly not a new term, but
it's a way of justifying selfish behavior.
Right. Yes. And so there were lines about finding myself again. And again, even one of the girls, like, I need this. I need this. Right. Like, really, it's so hard for you to just be a college student. You need this.
but that's to justify the things that they do.
Right.
We'll talk about it more in spoilers. Here's the thing. I think, you know, so much of this podcast I feel like is going to be spent talking about what does this mean, because it's the kind of movie that presents a lot of ideas that's open to a lot of interpretations, and we haven't talked about the meanings of those things, so I think we're going to be getting into that more in spoilers.
Okay.
But I just want to talk about real quick, like, I think it's absolutely a movie worth seeing.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a good chance a lot of people will reject it. I think there's a good chance you will hate it, and that's okay.
Makes for interesting discussion, though.
Absolutely, if you're willing to go there. See, I think a lot of people just want to shut down the discussion right away and say, like, I didn't like it. I didn't like the music. I didn't like the editing. I didn't like the overlapping lines. I didn't like the performances, which we'll get to. I didn't like the way it was put together. I didn't like the aesthetic of it. And that's okay. Right. But if you immediately reject all that, I think you're closing yourself off to talking about some of the ideas that the movie presents. Mm-hmm. But okay.
Some people won't like it just because it doesn't matter what it's about or how it's filmed or any of the artistic elements. It's just like nudity and partying, like from a moral. But I don't think those people even go.
Well, I think they did go and then immediately some hated of them, it. Like, and that's the thing. And the movie was released at spring break. I think if nothing else, the fact that this movie exists is so fascinating, and I love the fact that like they're marketing it this certain way, and that he cast these Disney girls in it in this movie. I think it's so subversive. And his wife. And if nothing else, it's one of the first movies, if not the first movie this year, that felt like I have to see that. I want to know what that thing is.
What's this about?
Exactly, and it's been built up for so long, you know, and in part because it's like, hey, look at these young girls in bikinis, and whatever. You know, we can pretend like as a country we're above using that to sell something, but Jesus, we use it to sell all of our music, all of our soft drinks. I mean, we use it to sell everything. So to pretend
that we're disgusted by
selling a movie that way is so hypocritical.
I've noticed, and this is not a new thing, but today I was thinking about it because I'm home on spring break. And so this morning, like, I saw like a morning news show, fun news, entertainment news. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. And all of the female hosts, reporters, any position that they're going to be on camera, they all wear sleeveless. They're all wearing, even in the winter, like, they're all wearing sleeveless dresses, all of them. They're showing their legs and their arms. And I thought, like, well, that's because now they can't really get, I mean, unless you're on, like, Extra or one of those California news shows, you can't, unless you're on regular California news, you can't be wearing, like, a low-cut tank top and a mini skirt. But
or on Fox News.
Right, right. But the closest you can get on Good Morning America or the Today Show or any of those types, they're still trying to sell you on, like, this is legit, you should pay attention. But then they're reporting, like, the viral video of the week, like, five times in a row. They're wearing, always showing, like, their arms and legs, which is fine. Like, I don't care. But there is a point there, I think, that, like, well, we need to be just a tiny bit salacious, even though we're trying to stay, like, those early scenes from the partying, they cut right back to the girls at college, right?
Yeah.
Do we want to talk about that?
We can, yeah. I just, where I was going with the thing I was saying before, no, it's fine. I liked watching the movie just because I liked the aesthetic. I liked the music. I liked the editing. I liked the photography a lot. So I enjoyed the experience of watching the movie, but I also really like trying to pull it apart. And I think the movie is saying a lot of things. All this was going a long way towards saying, I really liked this movie. It's the best thing I've seen so far this year. And again, that may not be saying much because I think it's been kind of a week.
Oh, it's been really
three
rough.
Months.
Oh, right. Yeah.
It's only March, so right. Okay. But like,
and it has been rough. But still, no, you're saying
last
you really
year
liked
at this
it.
Time, we had seen a handful of, I think, you know, good movies.
Wasn't last year Haywire, like in January, February?
Totally, yeah. Yeah. That's all that I wanted to say, that this is the best thing I've seen so far this year. I really liked the movie. Anyway, so let's talk about college.
Did you hear that Victoria's Secret is coming out with a line of underwear marketed towards middle-aged girls?
Again, that's the most depressing thing ever, and it all ties into some of what's going on in Spring Break.
Right. I heard that, and I thought of the point, I think, or the something that this movie's trying to say, that, like, we, a culture, or society, capitalism, I don't know, are allowing this to happen, that, like, okay, if you're going to start telling 12 and 13-year-old girls that they should wear lacy underwear that says "Call Me" on it, what are you trying to...
What's the end game?
Yeah, right. What,
right.
Why?
So what's, girls have sex at 12? I don't know.
But then when they end up partying or being anything like the girls in this movie, which I'm not saying, but you know what I mean, who's to blame? Like, why are we surprised? Who's to blame when someone says, I can't believe this behavior? I don't know. I mean, I was thinking about how, well, one review that I saw, it was Michael O'Sullivan of the Washington Post.
Nice.
And he said, he said something like, I'm paraphrasing, that the director didn't give the girls roles that even remotely resemble human beings. What do you think about that?
Oh, I disagree.
I know. I disagree, too. I was like, wow.
This is a person who's either out of touch
or
in denial.
Or in a different class. And I'm not saying it's about class, necessarily, this movie, but I think there are some comments on if you're raised in, like, poverty or sort of like, where financial, it's always a struggle for you, you might do things that someone raised with opportunities and culture and no financial worries, those people don't have to do. And I know this is so general and broad, so I apologize if someone's like, you're wrong, because whatever. Of course, like, rich people do bad things and poor people do great things. I'm not trying to make it like that. But I think that to say that they don't resemble human beings, he is very out of touch and doesn't understand that there's a lot of different things going on in our country right now.
Right.
And I think about the footage.
You work in high school, like.
Yeah, I do.
You know. Kids can be like this. You know?
Right, and there is an emphasis right now in our culture, I think, on partying. Everything has to be fun.
Course,
everything
yes.
has to be a party. Definitely. Everything has to be entertaining. Make this fun for me right now, all the time.
Right.
And that's just growing, I think. So, I don't know. That's part of it. But again, his comment, too, made me think of the, you know, we have video footage of all those boys at that Ohio party and the awful thing that happened to that girl. But, like, in all those videos, they're all just drinking and acting if there's no consequences for any of their actions. They're all partying. They're all underage. They're recording it. Like, it doesn't matter at all.
Right.
I heard on the news that many of those students, like, ones that weren't even involved in the actual rape, but many of these other students had, like, pictures of other students on naked on their phone. And it's just, like, they have no idea of the seriousness because...
Right.
I don't know. There's sort of this accepted. We sort of accept this partying culture, but then when
is the moral compass?
Right. And then when something bad happens, then we say, "Well, why? How did we get here?" But like, okay, let's go back to
It's a million little things.
What we're selling, you know? What are we trying to sell?
And it's not just Victoria's Secret.
No, no, God, no.
But it's they play a part, you know, as does the culture that allowed them to get to a point where it's okay to sell those things. You know, the performances in the movie. Aside from James Franco, which I guess we'll get to in a minute, I don't think are great.
Oh, no.
But I don't think it matters. Like, no. Obviously, I think all his work was done when he cast these people, when he cast Selena Gomez, when he cast Vanessa Hudgens, because the first thing this movie shows you after the Spring Break montage is, like, Vanessa Hudgens, star of High School Musical, doing a hit off a bong.
Right.
And, like... Ashley Benson, star of Pretty Little Liars, sticking a gun in her mouth and squirting alcohol in.
Right.
And so, yeah, it's definitely...
Which was annoying to watch. Yeah, so, like, even though I liked the movie, there's still things... That's the images are not always even artistic, necessarily.
Sure.
Likeable, but, like, there were parts where I was just like, I do not want to see her play with that stupid gun again, you know, but...
Right. It is definitely... He did it to be... subversive. Right. Did it to be shocking. And it works. And I think we could devote almost an entire show just to trying to understand his point in casting these specific girls and what the function, what he was trying to accomplish by doing that. Is it just to undercut their image? Is it to pull in this audience that wasn't going to see? I think you go a lot of different directions.
Well, and also, like, those girls were sold as a certain... type.
Right.
For, you know, the companies that use them. I don't mean use them in, like, a horrible way, but kind of, you know, the companies that use them to sell certain products of entertainment, and then he's doing the same thing, just in a different way.
Right. So I don't think their performances are great. I think they're kind of flat and dead-eyed, but I think that's the point. I think it's sort of this Paul Verhoeven approach to knowing exactly what he wants to get out of them, even if they don't totally understand what they're being used for. And I could be wrong. Maybe every choice that Vanessa Hudgens makes in the movie is 100% deliberate, or maybe she thinks she's giving this great performance. Either way, I think Harmony Korine is getting out of her exactly what he wants to get out of her. Having said that, I don't think there's anything necessarily wrong with the performances, A, because the performances are almost secondary, again, except for James Franco, who's on another level. But also because when you think about the dialogue in the movie and even some of the plot in the movie, when you look back, like, is there really anyone who could have given a great performance?
Right.
Given what they had to work with.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? Is there another actress who would have played the exact same part, but you would have walked away saying, like, man, she was good?
Right. No, because I think, I mean, of the four,
I don't think the material
feel...
was there necessarily. No. Which isn't a knock against the movie.
No. Ashley Benson, that's the blonde one, right? She was from ABC Family Show. She, I actually thought she was good, and I thought Selena Gomez was good, too.
Selena Gomez gets the most acting to
Yes, she has something to do. She has a little a range of emotions that she's supposed to feel at different points in the movie, so she gets to show a little bit more. And there's one scene where she has to hold some emotions on her face, and it's in a close-up shot. She... does a pretty good job with
it.
I guess
it's
she's
no
fine.
Ramona
and
Beezus, but it's fine.
Don't we have a Ramona and Beezus fan out there?
It's me. No, I've never seen it. I don't know.
I thought there was some F this movie joke along the line.
Yeah, well, it's not worth getting into, but years ago we did one of our best of shows, and I named it every time we got
to it. See, I knew it. You knew wait. We're all off track. What were we talking about?
Well, I was going to talk about James Franco real quick, just while we're talking about the performances.
Oh, okay, because I want to talk about... the beginning when they cut back from the partying scenes
and
they go to girls' college. Yeah, the way that they the way that they're being shot reminded me of the Fiona Apple video.
Okay.
Do you remember? Do you know what I'm talking about? Yes.
Nope. Okay.
I've been a bad, bad girl.
Criminal?
I've been, yes, thank you.
Okay.
The photography reminded me of that. Like the, and I knew that people would be hating it because he's exploiting these girls. There's a close-up of her hips or there's a close-up of her, you know, crotch or something.
Right.
But again, I couldn't help but think, like, there's got to be a point to this. There's got to be, he's doing something more than just a close-up.
Well, I mean, it's hard to argue that, I mean, yes, he's, you know, I guess perhaps exploiting these girls, although, you know, all of the actresses also signed up for the job and are participants in their exploitation. And that's a lot of what I think the movie is about, the way that some of these young girls can be participants in their own exploitation. Well, that's what Spring Break is all about, right?
Right, and using their sexuality for attention or power or whatever, and that's a whole another thing we can talk about later. Right.
Yeah. James Franco, I just want to say, because a couple of weeks ago I did a podcast with Adam about Oz the Great and Powerful and talked about how James Franco is, I don't think, all that great in that movie.
Okay.
Or powerful, for that matter. And I had said that, like Brad Pitt, I think he's more interesting as a character actor than he is as a leading man. And here comes Spring Breakers to 100% validate my point, because right now he's in two movies playing in theaters, Oz the Great and Powerful, where he's kind of a drip, and Spring Breakers, where he's unbelievable.
Yeah.
He plays this, you know, rapper, pimp,
gangster
wannabe thug with cornrows named Alien.
His teeth.
And he's just great. He's great in every scene. He's great in every scene.
Right. He doesn't miss, like, a beat. He doesn't, his eyes capture
he's
everything.
He's weirdly, like, he's incredibly entertaining to watch. You can't tell, like, if he's actually dangerous. Is he, does he have...
He's funny, but he's not making fun of it.
Right.
But he's still kind of, like, it's almost like he's kind of in on whatever the, you know, the whole point or the joke or whatever it is, but he never does it, like, over the top where it's obnoxious or...
The character
can be obnoxious, but
absolutely.
His performance...
It's a really good performance and worth seeing the movie, I think, for his performance alone.
Yeah.
If for no other reason.
They managed to make him look kind of freaky. Scary.
Yeah, definitely. And he's a good-looking guy, right, I think?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
I mean,
you're
a little bit emphatic with your, like,
You're
fanning yourself. Why are you you're laying down on our fainting couch.
This is not a podcast about Drive, okay?
When did we get a fainting couch? Take it easy with your Ryan Gosling. My goodness. Because he doesn't look that handsome in that movie he's got coming out, because his hair is all dyed down.
I know. I'm not into it.
I'm sure you'll still manage.
Just the way he puts it in the eyes.
What do we want to talk about before we get into spoilers? And the only reason that we want to get into spoilers kind of early is because
there's so much to spoil.
There's things to talk about, and I feel like this movie's better if you don't know.
Well, yeah, because I went into it really not knowing anything other than, okay, the director, so there's going to be a certain something here. I don't know what necessarily, but I knew I was going into just like a Spring Break movie.
Right.
Someone described it online as, I forget the name. You know how you love all those old beach movies?
Yeah.
With an,
Beach Party? Frankie and Mitt?
Yeah, they described it as like Beach Party meets Natural Born Killers.
That's reductive, but okay.
Okay.
Again, I hate anything meets any, and I'm sure I've been guilty of doing it before, but it's just this way of like trying to tell people what they're in for, because I don't think either of those are all that accurate, except, you know,
no, they're not.
There's some crime, and also there's some people on a beach in swimsuits.
Right, having a good time.
So I guess it's that, but whatever.
In the beginning of the movie, when they cut back to the girls in college before they go to spring break, there's a shot of all of the kids in a lecture hall, and they're all in front of laptops. And all the laptops are, like, in sync with, I think, the professor's PowerPoint. All the kids are staring at the same thing. They have this glow on their faces, and... the friends that I saw it with, we commented on, like, gosh, college doesn't seem like it was that long ago, but that is not what our lecture halls looked like at all.
Right.
I mean, there were people who brought their laptops into lectures when I was in college, but it still wasn't like the most common thing.
Right.
And at that time, people were actually like taking notes on their laptop. Now, I mean, the movie, they all have the same PowerPoint, but now when I see that, it's usually people are just on Twitter, but, hopefully reading at this movie. Hopefully. But that was something that just kind of stood out. And then the way that the campus just seemed very bland.
Sure.
Like, contrasting what she keeps saying, that, like, we need to get away, we need to have a good time, we need to get away from this, you know?
Right.
And another thing, this is just my own personal moments, when they're in the bathroom in the dorm and they're sitting on the floor in the corner of the public bathroom, it's so nasty, and two of the girls have really dirty feet, and I'm like, what are they doing? And it grossed me out, they're just barefoot everywhere.
I'm glad that was your takeaway. There's a moment not late in the movie, at one point in the movie they're all sitting around a screen, like an iPad or a little TV or something, and they're all watching My Little Pony cartoon.
Yes.
And it speaks to this thing that you and I have been identifying for years and years.
Talk about this all the time.
That there's teenagers now who are getting pregnant, having sex, but, like, wearing Hello Kitty pajamas.
Right, and,
like,
which, by the way, people getting pregnant when they're young, that's not a new thing, and, you know, it's whatever.
But there's this disconnect now, where everyone's a baby a and still watching Nickelodeon. Like, those are the shows they watch. They watch Nickelodeon.
Right.
But they're also, like, doing things way beyond their maturity
when it comes
level.
When it comes to certain, like, sexual behaviors, it seems like there's no thought of, you know, my, like, age appropriateness, which, whatever.
Or I drinking mean. Or
yes,
whatever.
Yes, right.
And again,
but, like, their culture and their like, free time entertainment all comes from, like you said, like, Nickelodeon, Disney Junior, they're still watching that. They don't have an interest in, like, other, I guess, I don't know, culture or news or entertainment, anything that comes at, like, an adult level.
I feel like too much of this podcast is becoming like kids today.
I just thought it was smart
that given what these girls are doing in the movie, that then they take time out to watch this little kids cartoon. But I think that's
one of the points that he's trying to make.
I think, again, even in the casting of Vanessa Hudgens and Selena Gomez, it's like you have both worlds meeting, where it's like, here's this person from this thing that, you know, that show she's on Disney Channel.
Right.
And then she's
party
to, you know, all this cocaine snorting. Right. And
I think it's also a comment on, I think, like, our world, this sounds so stupid, right? Our world is troubled. No, but our culture, I don't know, there's a lot of confusing things out there now. And part of it is, it's so great, like, technology is great. I love having cable and having, like, so many channels to choose from, right? But sometimes choices can be overwhelming. And so there's so much to choose that we're all, like, disconnected. And I think it's really confusing out there for young people right now. Mm-hmm. They're getting so many different images and, like, I don't know. They're getting so many different images thrown at them, ways that they're supposed to act. Like, you're supposed to be sexy, but you're supposed to also be a little girl. Or you're supposed to be smart, but, like, sometimes you should play dumb. Like, these are the things that they're hearing and seeing, and I don't know.
Right.
And so, yeah, I just think that they're confused, that, like, they act out. The girls in the movie, at times, they act out, and they do these things that no one should do. Right? But then they're still watching little cartoons and wearing little, they've got the pink backpack and little hearts and little kitty things. And I actually, going back to the dirty feet for a second, this is stupid, but I think that there was a point to that too, that he, like, they're so carefree in their lifestyle that, I don't know, that they don't think of something as simple as that, which is no big deal, being barefoot, whatever. But, when they do other things, they don't think of
just no
consequences.
Right.
That just, it's kind of like, I'm just going to do whatever I want, whenever I want, and hopefully it'll all work out.
Yeah. So let's get into spoilers. If you haven't yet seen Spring Breakers and you plan to, and I think you should, go ahead and tune out and then come back and please listen
after you've
seen the movie. If you don't care about having it spoiled, go ahead and keep listening. Okay, so...
Wait, real quick.
Yes.
So I just made... Spoilers, right? Yes.
Yes, now we're in spoilers.
So, okay, I make that point about that they feel like they have no consequences.
Yes.
That's like the rest of the movie, right?
That's the whole movie.
Right.
Again, it's this way of justifying selfish behavior, right? Mm-hmm. That's what the movie's about, because very early on, the girls decide they don't have the money to go away for spring break, and they want to because they need this, which they keep saying.
Right. We need this.
Even though, again, nothing in their life is shown to be, maybe it's a little
dull.
Right,
but
dull,
it hints at it,
like,
right. Where? It hints at the one girl has a very, very religious background, so she seems to be a little bit like, what's the word?
Repressed?
Yes, repressed by that, and maybe... I don't know. You don't know much about their backstory.
No, and you don't need to. Again, no justification is given or even a hint
at... But they don't have money for spring break, and they don't have a parent that is paying for
it. Right. Well, parents are absent because they're just shown to be calling home all the time. Mm-hmm.
And those are some of the speeches that repeat. The girl's calling home, and then you hear that speech again. You hear the speech again.
So they decide to rob a diner, I think, right? Mm-hmm. Or like a chicken place to get the money to go on spring break. And the way that the robbery is shot is fantastic. I love that whole sequence where Rachel Corrine is driving around the building and you just are looking in the windows. And so they get the money.
Well, and how do they get, like, their bravery up?
They say it's like playing a video game.
Just pretend you're playing a video game. Just be hard. Just pretend, you know, just be hard. Right.
Pretend you're in a movie. I forget where I was going with that. Well, because later Selena Gomez says something to the effect of, like, we're just supposed to be having fun. I can't remember what it was. Like, it's not fair. We didn't do anything wrong. Right. That was the speech where it's not fair. We didn't do anything wrong. We're just trying to have fun. And again, it's this total solipsistic, like, looking past any bad behavior that they've done. This isn't fair. Why? All we were trying to do is have fun. Like, no, you robbed people at gunpoint.
And also that they, like, deserve this fun. Right. Exactly. Well, Selena Gomez, she's the character that comes from the very religious background, and she does not participate in robbing that diner.
Right.
But later, but she is knows very that that's happy. How they got I think the she, money. Right. And she even says, I think, I'm so glad that you guys did this. I'm so glad. And she says it in this sweet little, I'm so glad that you guys did this. Like, thank you so much. So, I don't know if he's trying to make a comment on that, too.
For sure he is. Right. Again, it's taken...
Not that religion is bad, but just that some people aren't quite... I don't know.
It's just the disconnect. It's sort of this hypocrisy.
Hypocritical about it.
And that's what the whole movie is, that it takes this certain mentality that we talked about, this selfish, I want what I want mentality... Mm-hmm.
And I deserve this.
Right.
A lot of that.
To sort of an absurdist extreme. But, you know, that mentality, by the way, it's sort of this spring break mentality. And that's what the movie is about. The extending the mentality of spring break, of fun without consequences, to their logical extreme. And it's repeated throughout the movie. Spring break forever. It's not just this 1 week a year. It's forever.
Right.
Spring break is a state of mind that we're going to live in.
They want to stay there.
Right. And they essentially
so wonderful.
Do, because the movie is sort of about the self-actualization of these two girls who are, I don't know, like sociopaths, basically. Right. By the end of the movie, they've committed countless murders and robberies, and they've achieved the state of being that they've wanted to come to.
Right.
And is it a happy ending? I mean, in one way, I was like, I didn't want to see them killed.
Right.
And I thought for sure the whole movie, the way that every shot, every edit comes with this booming, like, racking of a shotgun, or like, you know that we're heading towards violence. And because we've seen so many movies, we know so many movies want to punish the characters for their behavior, and so you're just waiting for the scene where they are ultimately gunned down, and the movie ends with them laying bloody and fade to credits. And,
it didn't quite get there.
And crime doesn't pay, you know.
Right.
And it doesn't. They get away with tons of money and a new car, like, and spring break lasts forever for them. And it's crazy. It's crazy what this movie presents.
Do you feel like one of the... So the two girls that are at the end that you're referring to...
Yeah.
Ashley
Benson and Vanessa Hudgens.
Yeah, I kind of felt like Vanessa Hudgens' character was more of the follower and Ashley Benson was more of the leader. But then, when I think about it, I don't even know if they took those roles at all. It was like they were following each other because they didn't know what else to do. Like, this is just the way it is. We're going to keep...
I think your reaction may be coming out of their performances.
Okay.
Because Ashley Benson is a little more stone-faced and seems a little
more confident. Like I memorize my lines and I'm performing. And Vanessa Hudgens at times, I think, was like unsure of the camera.
And she's kind of playing more of like the little sex pot or whatever. But when you think about the scene on which a lot of the movie turns, where, you know, we've seen the threat of rape hangs over so much of the movie.
Oh my gosh, I know. It feels so heavy in certain scenes.
There's a scene with Rachel Corrine where you're just like, oh, she's going to be raped, right? And she's not. And again, the movie sort of is asking the question, like, is it possible for her to be complicit in this. And again, mm-hmm. no woman is ever complicit in her own rape.
No.
Never. But the movie is sort of examining, like, what part is she playing in whatever is going to happen? I don't know.
Right, I know. That's so hard to... I know what you're trying to say. I think it's so hard to explain. But in that scene, it's exactly right.
You're like, so just worried that it's going to happen, and then you're angry at her, because it's like, stop doing the things that you're doing.
Right, even though it still wouldn't be her fault, but it's like, this is not a good situation for a long time now.
There's another scene with James Franco and Selena Gomez, where it's like, this feels like he's going to do some dark shit.
Right.
So the threat of rape hangs over the whole movie, right? And then we get to this scene in the middle of the movie with James Franco and Selena Gomez and Ashley Benson. It's the look at my shit scene that everybody's talking about. And it's a great scene because he's very funny and sort of charming but he's awful. You know, he's just pointing out all his guns and now he has Scarface on repeat and it's the worst.
Oh my
gosh,
Scarface on repeat though made me laugh.
So Vanessa Hudgens in that scene, to me, I think, is sort of the first one to take it where she does, where ultimately they start repeating the things they were saying at the diner, get down on your knees, and are they going to shake him down, and are they going to kill him, and then she sticks the gun in his mouth, and he fellates it, and it's this crazy scene, like, what am I seeing? With these stars, but it's
at that point, they had practiced
again.
Those lines, like, again, going back to, like, pretend you're in a movie, pretend you're in a video game, just think it's a video game, and then they practice those lines, and then they retell the story to the Christian girl who didn't participate.
Right.
They're telling her, they're acting out in the parking lot, and so by the time it does get to that James Franco scene, you do think, like, they've really practiced this, so now they're acting it out, like, they've turned, like, they're pretending has turned them, but, you know.
Right, and again, is that a scene that's sort of about, for as much as the movie is about, you know, perhaps the exploitation of women, is that a scene that's about the girls empowering themselves? Mm-hmm. Because I do think, in a lot of ways, the movie is about this idea of female empowerment. I'm not saying it's a positive empowerment. I'm not saying that, like...
It's what we want to teach.
Exactly. But it is, essentially, you know, that's a scene where they definitely have the power over James Franco in every way. Even sexually, because ultimately he ends up being the one who performs this weird, you know, phallic sex act to the end of the movie, where he turns out to be utterly ineffectual and is killed before anything can happen.
Right.
And they are the ones who run through and kill everyone and are unharmed and are ultimately empowered. Again, it's not a positive empowerment, but...
Right. Well, and does that somehow come from that... We do get backstory on James Franco's, and his character's name is Alien, that's his rapper name, right? Mm-hmm. Or his gangster name. We do get backstory in his life. Doesn't he reference, like, growing up poor and...
Being the only white kid in his neighborhood, he was best friends with this guy who now they're going to rob.
Played by Gucci Mane, that now they're enemies, and there's a couple scenes showing that they don't like each other anymore. Gucci Mane, like, hates him and doesn't want him to come around, but James Franco's, like, almost... in this childish way, like, he has this little devilish grin, and he keeps, like, showing up where he's not wanted anymore.
Right.
Almost, I don't know, to test it, or to, like...
Right.
He seemed more, like, thoughtful about, like, the old friendship growing up in the neighborhood, whatever. But, so there's, you get this idea that he grew up kind of poor. And so then, this clownish, I mean, James Franco looks so silly.
Yeah.
Is this all this desperate, and he talks the way he talks about his guns and his money, and I'm going to lay out with my tanning oil. I've got suntan oil, and I'm laying out all day, or something about the oil. I thought the way he said the word oil made me laugh so hard. I can't even explain why. It makes sense in my head. But all that stuff seemed to be filling, like, this hole, right, that he grew up without. In our society, money can get you a lot of things. And can, like, so is it... Well, he didn't have money, so now he needs to get power and money. It turns into this whole thing, like, having all these guns, having all this money, just try to keep filling that hole. And he's, like, playing this gangster part. And so then I wondered if, and even on Gucci Mane's part, too, like, that he seems to be a stronger, more in control, like, gangster figure. But is Harmony Korine trying to make a point, too, about that? That, like, that's all, that lifestyle is all a front for people trying to, like, fill... this need or this emptiness inside that they didn't have. And so the girls, when they're really effective at the end and they take over, did they is it like, was James Franco always weak on the inside? He was always like a front, and the girls maybe were always a little tougher, but they always had to not behave that way as young women before, you know? Sure. So now it's like, no, now we are badasses.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. There's a great scene. And again, I think the movie is worth seeing just for its imagery, because that shot of the pink dock at night that goes off into just blackness really sticks with me. I mean, it's such a striking image. But there's another scene that I just had to laugh just because of what I was seeing. And it's getting talked about a lot, I think, where it's shot exactly like a music video. James Franco is sitting at a white piano on the beach at sunset. I mean, you've seen it in countless fucking music videos.
Especially like boy band videos from the 90s.
And they say, play something inspiring, and he plays this Britney Spears song. And again,
it's called Every Time, I think.
And you know, maybe we're supposed to laugh because ha-ha, Britney Spears, and then they juxtapose it with, again, another well-shot robbery sequence.
Right.
And I, you know, lots of movies have done that, where it's like the ironic song and the violent scene. And I don't necessarily think that Harmony Korine is actually having us laugh at the fact that we're listening to Britney Spears. I mean, it's definitely absurd, but like, again, in the minds of these characters, like, that is something inspired. That is what they're inspired by. Britney Spears music.
Right.
They're not.
She comes up a couple times.
That's not
in
the guilty pleasure. Yeah, she absolutely does. And that's not the guilty pleasure for them. Like, that's the thing they go, that's their world.
Right.
So he's playing this song. So he's playing Britney Spears. He's sitting at this piano on the beach at sunset. There's three girls standing at the piano with him. Everything about it looks exactly like a music video, except they're all wearing these pink ski masks, and it's this beautiful, crazy
image
that sums up the movie for me in so many ways. I was so amazed that the movie got to that point where it could present you with that image, and it makes sense in the context of the movie, but if you take it out, you're like, what is this thing?
Okay, again, I saw a critic, like, I just saw a quote come up online that said, the scene at the piano where they all sing is one of the most laughable scenes that did not intend to be funny, and the guy hated the movie. And I didn't read really anything else that he said, so I, you know, full disclosure. But, like, the fact that he said he hated the movie and that that scene was so funny, he didn't get it.
Well, see, and I always hesitate to be the one who says,
I know,
like,
I don't want to say it again. I don't know.
This person didn't get it.
I know, I feel bad.
And still not like it. But I do have a problem with with critics or with audiences who refuse to accept that maybe there's more.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, it's fine if you don't like it, but to immediately dismiss conversation and to close yourself off to the idea that maybe this movie has more on its mind, even though it's presenting you on the surface with drinking, cocaine, bikinis, sex, guns, all these things that, like, again, are signifiers of the end of the world, as we often say.
Talking to someone that just I know in my regular life, maybe who didn't like it or maybe thought that scene was like so stupid and funny or whatever, like I would get that because they're not getting paid to write for a national publication and review film, you know. So I want someone like that to hopefully have a little more open mind
there's a lot of people I wouldn't recommend this movie to,
right?
Because they don't necessarily want to think beyond the things that they are presented with, and so we're not going to have that conversation. So they're going to see a movie where girls act horribly and that's it. And they're going to hate it. And that's fine. But on a movie website like ours or like the film critic for this national publication, you're expected to be better. Again, that doesn't mean you have to like the movie.
Right. Just to be able to talk about it in a way that doesn't just bring it down to like, it was so, and then, it's so stupid. It was funny, but it wasn't supposed to be.
It's just ignorant. I was trying to process because I thought it was kind of funny the second time we get to Selena Gomez at one point backs out. And she's been sort of the more moral character. But again, there's this hypocrisy because she's justifying her morality. She's the one who says, we didn't do anything wrong. We're just trying to have fun. Like, meanwhile, no, you're doing all kinds of shit wrong.
Right.
You just don't think your fun is wrong and you're justifying what you want to do by saying you're not doing anything wrong. But she eventually, once they hook up with Alien, gets nervous and says, I want to go home. And she does. So we get shots of her driving home on the bus looking sad because now she's going back to her normal, boring life and has to leave spring break. then a little bit later in the movie, and this was the point where I kind of laughed, that series of shots is almost repeated when Rachel Green gets shot.
In the arm.
And decides she's had enough.
Right.
And she leaves. Mm-hmm. And I just liked the idea that while I don't think that the crime stuff is, like, sort of imaginary in the way that, like, in a David Lynch movie at a certain part, there would be some crazy departure, and then we would say, like, but none of that stuff actually happens. That's just this crazy metaphor for this other thing. I don't think the movie would support that kind of a reading, but at the same time, I do think that the crime stuff becomes a metaphor for eternal spring break, and I like the idea that, like, spring break, in giant air quotes, like, defeats a lot of the people in this movie, that only the most hardcore...
Right.
can continue to live spring break. So right. it beats Selena Gomez. It beats Rachel Corrine. It even beats James Franco.
Right.
And,
who sort of was like living spring break, air quotes forever.
But he can't cut it. Only these two girls by the end of the movie can cut eternal spring break. That image was funny to me that like another person got beaten by spring break and she's on the bus going home, you know, literally licking her wounds.
Oh, well, and a friend that I saw it with kind of made a comment about how it seemed like each girl sort of left on her own terms. Like, okay, at this point, the religious character had enough, right? And then at this point, getting shot in the arm, okay, I had enough, you know. But the other two girls...
But again, she takes part in the Britney Spears robbery.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
So she's fine doing these things. It's just when, oh, this has a bad consequence for me, now I want out.
Right. Well, and it's almost like the first girl who leaves is afraid that things are going to get worse, right? And then the next one is like, oh, things got pretty bad. I got shot in the arm. This is dangerous now. Now I'll leave. And the last girl, like, whatever. We're just going to keep going.
Before that, it was a video game. Right. Because she was the one running around with the gun.
You don't actually. Right.
There was no actual harm in it for her. And then when there was, she backed out. Right. And those last two girls are the most hardcore.
Another comment that I wanted to make, and I don't know what you think about this, if you even noticed it, but the girls are always hanging on each other. Mm-hmm. They're always in sort of the state of, like, cuddling, touching, not necessarily sexual, though, just, like, the comforting is always, like, this big dramatic gesture of, like, come here, let me hold you, let me rub your arm, and I do see that happening in, you know, if you watch, like, reality shows, you'll see the girls hanging around. They're always, like, hugging, and everything's very dramatic. I don't know. And so I feel like our culture is sort of giving this example that, I don't know, why does it have to be that way? Why are friendships between women being turned into this thing where everyone always just has to, like, hug and be... So anyway, my point is, even when she's shot in the arm, the girls are just, like, hanging on her, rubbing her hair, everything will be okay, the way that you might hug, like, a toddler when he just, like, bumps his knee and is crying a little bit. Like... She got shot in the arm. Like, shouldn't you be going to the hospital? I don't know. Like, if I got shot, I don't care where. It could be my toes. Like, take me to the emergency room immediately.
And again, I guess maybe you could make the argument that the reason that the other girls are not... It's not that they're not concerned, but they're not interested in this stopping their party.
Right. And also that their concern is from a distance in a way... because if everything is meant to feel like, if the whole line of, like, pretend you're in a movie, pretend you're in a video game, is meant to maybe mean more, like, she's shot in the arm, that's really rough, oh, I hope you're okay, and you're comforting her, but, like, again, in the back of their minds, do they really think anything bad can happen to them? Like, so something bad did happen to them, but it's still sort of
but ultimately it did not happen to them.
Well, right.
And we see that again later on when James Franco is shot in the head.
So quickly,
yeah, and very abruptly, and they don't then stop and turn around. Like, this guy was their leader, quote-unquote. Right. This is the guy who got them into this. Mm-hmm. He's the one that they were sort of doing it for. They don't stop and turn around and go back.
Because then I guess they're not doing it for him anymore. You know, that it had become...
Right, and so is that them, again, not acknowledging or acknowledging that, like, well, this bad thing didn't happen to me, I'm going to keep going. Is it not believing that anything bad can happen to them? Is it them, like I said earlier, like, sort of becoming empowered? Like, okay, this man is out of the picture, but we don't need the man. Right. We could do this ourselves.
Right.
again, I think any of these things is sort of valid. I don't think there's a right answer, and I don't necessarily think that Harmony Korine, like, made it with one interpretation in mind, but it's also not, I don't think, the kind of movie that's annoyingly obtuse and like, well, it means whatever you want it to mean, man. Like,
no, you could
this
just
is nonsense for the sake of nonsense.
You just pick one meaning or one metaphor and go with that.
Yeah, or you could just, or you just watch it on a straight, like, narrative level. I think it's obviously way less satisfying in that way because
then the plot is just like, okay, here's this gangster guy who gets these girls, who tricks them into doing this stuff, and then it happens, you know.
Right, and I think we're just.
But if you're watching it on that level, then the piano scene maybe does become comical, right? Because again, it's just like, what? They're breaking out into this weird music video from 1990.
I guess, yeah. Or you've seen enough movies, and so you're just over that trope of like the ironic song over the violent scene.
Right. Yeah.
So that's level two. But then, I don't know, you just have to be the kind of person who's like, I think there's more to this, or this filmmaker has more on his mind to just do something that's kind of hacky like that.
Right.
I don't know. I just think, you could watch it again on just a straight narrative level, but to enjoy stuff, I typically ask like, okay, but why? But why this? Why this?
Right.
And as soon as you start to do that with this movie, I think it opens up a lot of interesting possibilities, and that's why I really like the movie.
Well, because by asking why this, you're remembering that movies are art, you know, ultimately.
Right. And this movie is definitely art, and I think again that's part of why people are hating it, because they went in not wanting art; they wanted for almost an escape from, they went in for anti-art, that's what the movie presents on the surface, but ultimately
and then there's
going to
be people who say, well, it's art, but it's not art for me, like, if
sure,
they're,
and that's,
this,
and that could
this
be,
is too low-class art, maybe,
sure.
just because of the subject matter,
right,
like, oh, drinking and partying, and
right, or again, it's not art for me because of the aesthetic, it's very aggressive, the music, and the cutting, and the use of color in the movie. It's very aggressive. Yeah. And so
Florida.
I certainly understand why
Florida
somebody
is neon,
reject that. Cliff Martinez did the score, and he did the score for Drive, and he does great electronic scores. The music in the movie is really fantastic.
I thought of Drive more than once during the movie.
Yeah.
I also thought of The Social Network.
You just always have Ryan Gosling in the movie.
Yeah, that's true.
And
I also thought of The Social Network.
Because you always have
there was a piece of music
Jesse
that reminded
Eisenberg
me. There was
the
a
brain.
Piece of music that reminded me of
Trent Reznor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the very kind former students who were trying to almost warn me not to go, you know, tell me how terrible it was. I just, it was kind of them to care. But there was a fourth young person who I did not know, and he just said, well, it's pretty bad, but it's art. So maybe, I don't know what he, I don't know exactly how he finished it, but he did say, well, it is art, it is art. So he kind of seemed to get that maybe someone else would get something out of the film that he didn't.
Right. Well, that's good.
Yeah.
Again, I so appreciate the fact that, like, they're sneaking this movie in under the guise of, like, Big Spring Break Party. I don't know.
Right.
I really, really liked it. I hope more people will.
Yeah, I want to see it again. I want to think about everything I thought about at the end of the movie. I want to have that on the brain when I'm watching the movie.
Yeah, no, I totally understand. Even some of the overlapping stuff, it's like knowing what certain things mean by the end, I think will change the way you watch the first half. And again, even the decision to rob, it's not like it suggests that this ever occurred to them before. It's just like, oh yeah, we want money. Oh, well, let's just go take it.
Right.
I don't know. I really liked the movie.
So. I liked it too.
Thanks everybody for listening. Spring break forever.
Spring break.
Remember, you can always email us at fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com. Check us out at fthismovie.net. You, I now return you to your regularly scheduled spring break.
Spring break, y'all!